Programming on KFAI is supported in part by the Bush Foundation, investing in great ideas and the people who power them. Introducing the 2025 Bush Fellows, leaders working to make the region better for everyone. More information is online at bushfoundation.org.
Far, far away, behind the moon, beyond the rain.
Take a walk on the wild side.
Chocolate-covered rainbows. Black boys, get on down, down.
Every G&L has a New York tale to tell. The Stonewall was everyone.
Let them take you and make you invisible.
Good evening and welcome to Fresh Fruit, the longest running weekly queer radio show in the country, every Thursday from 7 to 8. I'm your host, Dixie Trichle, and tonight on Fresh Fruit, we're celebrating Pride Month and Juneteenth, and my guest is Alexis Camille, she-they, improv actor, comedian, storyteller, educator, and U.S. Marine Corps veteran. She hosts comedy improv, Jam, and Improv for Healing at Queermunity, and plays Glow in the queer comedy sci-fi feature film Patton Glow, Save the World. They are a member of the all-black comedy troupe Blackout Improv and worked with Huge Improv Theater and the Theater of Public Policy, also known as Danger Boat Productions. Plus, we'll have music and surprises. Alexis, welcome to Fresh Fruit.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, come a little closer to the mic.
Yeah.
All right. And or you could pull the mic closer to you.
That's, sure, sure.
Yeah, there you go. So tell us about yourself and how you got involved in comedy.
Yeah, I think you did such a great job initially of introducing me. I appreciate it. Thank you. How did I get into comedy? I feel like I've always been a little bit of a comedian. I found myself as a child just being all the jokes and things. There was like actually a time, I was kind of thinking about this recently, like my mother was ill when I was young and ultimately passed away, but I remember a lot of the time just like full on out, just whatever I could do to make her laugh. Kind of energy was like my thing. I'm sure it was part like craving a lot of attention, but also if I could make her laugh, I got a good kick out of it. And just as the years went on, I just come from a really funny family. My siblings and things are some of the funniest people I know. And when I got out of the Marine Corps, I tried to go back to school for like communications or something like that, and ultimately was like, I can't do this way. I need to do like theater, and then that led me to improv, and then that's when everything, all the doors opened in my heart. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so comedy's been my thing for life. Yeah, mm-hmm. Honestly.
Do you find that? Have you ever done a serious role of any sort?
My life is a serious role.
Okay.
You know, like, have I done a serious role? I've done a little scripted theater around town that required like a little more like a serious approach or some drama to it. Mm-hmm. I'm not so amazing mm-hmm. at scripted theater. I have the memory of like a gnat, but I appreciate the approach. And I think there's like a lot of depth that comes from folks with a serious sense of humor. I don't know if you've ever kind of heard that stereotype that comedians are just like deeply like have experienced a lot of hardship in life and like a lot of trauma and stuff. And that ultimately, I feel like with the comedy provides so much catharsis mm-hmm. and there's a lot of beautiful storytelling that can happen in comedy, and that just, I feel like comedians get to use comedy as a healing tool and that it connects folks. It's really hard to listen to a lot of comedians and not feel some kind of a connection and relationship mm-hmm. to the story, stories that are told. And that's where the funny comes in. It's just like that mm-hmm. familiarity, and comedy has been that healing tool. Like when in doubt, laugh, you know, like it's good for the soul.
Yeah. Well, so when you're attracted to improv, mm-hmm. What do you think makes you attractive to that particular style of comedy?
I don't have to remember a thing. Like, I don't have to memorize anything. And also, like, I don't have to be funny, right? Like, using improv, the cool thing about it is that I can use it as a tool to just take an experience of mine and play it out. And the cool thing about improv, you know, there's this quote unquote like rule of like yes and, where essentially your scene partner gets to build on your offering, right? You provide this gift, whatever this declaration is, and sometimes I just like access some real life thing that has happened to me, and it's really fun to see what the other person does with it. Mm-hmm. Right? I don't have to have the whole thing thought out and expect them to like carry my story on. But what are you gonna do with this story? The time I was riding my bicycle with my sister and I was, you know, had my hands around her waist and I accidentally was tickling her and she was like, oh, you're tickling me, and we fell over on the bike. There's a really fun way in improv to kind of set that up a little bit and see where the other person takes it. So, you know, there's just a lot of room for range of expressing yourself, and
because you got to think on your feet then.
Sure.
Right? I mean, your mind is like, what does you do? You're going 100 miles an hour thinking, what am I going to do? How am I going to respond to this? Where am I going?
Yes,
you
and
know,
no. Right? Because I think some people are really good at like narrative and things and like plotting out a couple steps ahead. That is not a strength of mine. My thing, I'm pretty reactionary and very relationship focused. For example, if somebody communicates, we're siblings, I know what it's like to have a sibling. I know how I feel about my siblings. And the beautiful thing is in improv, Sure, there's some wit involved and like thinking quick on your feet, but I think some of the most beautiful improv that I've ever seen is like silent improv. It's just purely physical, like non-verbal, or just very little spoken, or this really beautiful slow pace where you actually have time to process. Or, you know, there's something we call scene painting, where someone can literally scene paint. Like, we've got a bush over here, and the sky is purple. It smells like patchouli. Like, you can do all these beautiful things with improv and essentially play make-em-ups. That's all you're doing. Mm-hmm. And kind of go at your pace. Again, you don't have to be funny, and I can, like, slowly build a world and see what my friends are going to do with it. And mm-hmm. some of my favorite improv, yeah, is, like, really patient, heartfelt, take your time, imagine what you see in this space. Like, if you ever see me doing improv and there's a lot going on and there's just like a moment you see me reaching into a kitchen cabinet or washing my hands or like pretending, right, we call space work, and I'm taking a breath, mm-hmm. right? Also mm-hmm. just looks more interesting to like make the world come to life,
right?
But like, I just really love those moments of pause and like giving space to this other person to like co-create with you. Mm-hmm. So, and a lot of people are like, oh, I'm not funny, or I can't think that fast. Cool, man. Do you show up as you are? You mm-hmm. have your own stories and experiences, and that is enough. And it's a beautiful thing to kind of like have that, you know, like freedom and like space to express yourself without doing it somebody else's way.
You're hosting some activities, events at Queermunity.
Yeah.
At both with improv. One is like an improv jam, and then the other one is the improv and healing. Talk a little bit about those.
Sure. Basically kind of the same thing to me. Like, that's my approach when I'm teaching and like workshopping. Improv is like this foundation of like healing and confidence, you know, this conversation or consideration of like ego versus confidence. Like, a lot of people come to, you know, the space and, you know, the ego, they're like, oh, when I say ego, like, means I want to, like, take up a lot of space, or I think I'm the head honcho, when it's like, oh, also let's consider what ego means when you don't allow yourself to take up space, when you're afraid mm-hmm. to take risk. Like, how is your ego getting in the way of you building confidence with feeling essentially like a permission to like be in the space and just play? And so with Queermunity, like I read something about them in the paper and I was like, yo, what is this? It was really cool because it was like the co-founders, Hillary Ote and Kayla Barth, names were in the paper, and I think Kayla was in there. She's a veteran. And, you know, there's just all these beautiful things that were set up about Queermunity that was really interesting. And I immediately sent out an email and got in touch with Kyra Crawford, Calvert over there, who is the director of operations. And I was like, hey, I do improv. Improv saved my life. It was this really beautiful healing tool. Can I bring some improv to this space and like just volunteer to like share this like form of play as a healing tool? And they were like, yeah, come on. And they're really good about that. If you like have an offering, they, you know, bring folks on board to mm-hmm. Share things. And so I get to do this improv, essentially with healing foundation. And so again, back to the confidence building, taking risk, allowing yourself to take up space, being okay with not taking up space. I take up a lot of space. And when there are people in the space, you know, when I'm doing these jams, it's like, hey, what if your thing you want to work on today is like sitting back a little bit? And hey, what if your thing today is like taking up a little space, or if, you know, feeling scared? This is a vulnerable space. We're all being vulnerable together. You get to play. You have permission to play. A lot of affirmations thrown in there, and we just play some games and, you know, just get comfortable with connecting with people, looking each other in the eyes, you know, connection, and like creating some form of trust and safety to get back to that core feeling of like, it's okay to play.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. like your playground style, you're like a kid, you're like, I'm a knight, this is the drawbridge, you're a horse, and this, you know, and like that kid, I say, come into this space and I want you to like access that kid again mm-hmm. and like, give each other a lot of grace to like play and not get it right and be cool. What does it feel like somatically to like let go and let things land where they land and go as fast or as slow or silent or physical as you need to like feel cool in this space and just like keep working at it through this like improv playground stuff.
So how does it work now? Let's say someone comes to the jam, let's say, and you know they don't have any experience in theater or anything. Do you like, you said you play some games. Do you give people exercises to do before you begin trying to create scenes? And then do you give them kind of a guideline or how does that work?
So the games are great. They're usually, a lot of folks do it this way. A lot of the games that you play kind of set you up for success for like saying doing scene work, whether it's like a game that is about practicing listening. One of my favorites is like you say a line, the other person repeats that line verbatim, then they respond, then you repeat their line, then you wait a moment and you then respond. So like that kind of patient listening. Some games, like these pattern games where you're throwing pretend balls, it's just about listening and sending and receiving and eye contact and being ready to kind of keep an eye out for patterns. And so a lot of these games, they're fairly simple, done with like toddlers and stuff like that, you know, like word association games.
Yeah.
That's the setup to, again, then putting folks in a position to, maybe it's just like a two-person scene. Say a couple of words. Make up a conversation. Or you give folks, hey, here's a relationship. Doctor, patient. Or teacher, student.
Okay.
There's power dynamics in some of these also that you can work with. Or something simple like siblings. And that usually is generative for folks. Again, like, I know what it's like to have siblings. Though I've had people in the room, they're like, I'm an only child. I was just making it up. Cool, that's all I want you to do. Like, you know what I mean? You did a great job. But, so the space is set up to kind of, like, build that little bit of confidence to play these, like, little games. And I feel like even when people come in, they're like, oh, I'm just going to watch. 90% of the time they jump up and they just go, all right, I can do this thing. Because it's set up in a way that is, for one, establish boundaries in this space, right? I could do comedy and I could do all the low blows and make fun of the way you look, make fun of the way you talk and the way you dress and blah, 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 blah. That's low hanging fruit, too easy, and it's not interesting. But when you have this container, like I learned at Huge Theater when I, you know, came out here, combat veteran, I was ready to say whatever, do whatever. They're like, oh, no, we don't do that. You gotta have to play smarter. And I was like, oh, God, I don't know what to do with myself. But ultimately what I learned was like, oh, I can think of other ways to connect with people and creating a quote unquote like safe space for people to feel like they can actually be there in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Folks are already tender enough. They don't need to come in this space where they're expected or encouraged to play, yet be at the ready, somebody's gonna like joan on them or make fun of them or whatever. So set the space up with boundaries. For example, I generally like a boundary that I'll put into this space or as a common boundary is like, we're not gonna do police, you're not gonna arrest folks in particular. If I, like for me, any workshop or jam that I'm teaching it is always queer BIPOC centered, period. Like that is the representation. That's how I present. That's how we take care of each other, and we honor that. And if you're, like, not on board, you're not ready for that, please kindly leave. Mm-hmm. But if you are okay with boundaries of, you know, no violence or we're not going to do medical experiments or some people ask, like, I'm serious, right? Like, no narcissism. There's stuff that people, like, I don't want to deal with this when I'm trying to play.
Yeah.
There's no shame in it. There's so much grace in it. All right, cool. We're going to have to work around that. And if your go-to is, you know, arresting folks or, like, you know, presenting weapons or something like that, you're going to have to figure something else out, which I think challenges the brain.
Yeah.
And really makes you, like, think about how can I connect? So ultimately making sure that the space is set up for success and that everyone down to, you know, whomever, like, can be in that space, whether it's content boundaries, or physical boundaries. Some folks don't want to be touched. I don't want to be hugged by a stranger a lot of times. Jams, you don't know everybody.
Yeah, that's right.
Right? Mm-hmm. So, hey, we're not going to hug. We're just going to do, you know, handshakes and high fives. Some folks are like, I don't want anybody to touch my hands. All right, cool. We're just going to take that off the table. Keep your hands to yourself. Sometimes people will be like, hey, just don't touch me. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. You know, we can da-da-da. So anyway, there's a lot of different ways to create the space for folks to be successful and have the room and, like, confidence and freedom to, like, all right, I can, like, come in here, be me, and I don't have to worry about somebody saying something sexist or racist or ableist or, you know, did I say ageist yet? You know, like yeah. For real. And some people like, oh, man, that's, like, that's corny. And you tell me you find it difficult that you can't have fun and play in a space without being a jerk. Like, mm-hmm. It's just grow up.
Yeah.
And I find it way more entertaining and skillful to operate within that container, and it really creates space again for folks to show up and get the healing that they need. Mm-hmm. Right? I can and play, and comedy is healing. It mm-hmm. just in its nature is, in particular as we become adults. And you know, I do this stuff with young folks too, but it's something, you know, particular yeah. when we've gotten really far away from that playful nature.
Is there any kind of an age limit with your improv jams?
No. No, not officially. Mm-hmm. I'm open to young folks coming in, younger folks like children and such. But I honestly think that, so there's a lot of ways you could do that, right? I could create a completely different space. I could say that specifically, like, this is a family jam. Sometimes that intersection is a little challenging for flow. But at the same time, like, sure. Like, I don't know. I feel like young teenagers, good to go. Maybe the younger babies might have to create their own space. But yeah. That's not entirely true. You know?
So it changes from improv jam to improv jam. It's always a different group of people, pretty much. Or
yeah, and there's some regulars for sure that come a lot.
And how often does this jam happen?
Yeah, so every Tuesday
okay.
from 6 to 8 at Queer Immunity, this jam is going down. There's a cafe in there. You can come a little early, grab something to drink or a little sandwich or something like that. And the way I have it set up now, so Queer Immunity in general, just put it out there, is 7 days a week, open from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. If you just need a space, safe space to, like, just be in. Mm-hmm. They got a little library, a little artist corner, ping pong table, and have a lot of different events and things going on there. But on those Tuesdays, so for example, next week, June 24th is the BIPOC jam, all right? And so what I'm going to do starting in July, I'm actually going to do alternating weeks, and I'm shooting for the second and fourth Tuesday in July is the BIPOC jam.
Okay.
And ultimately, it's going to be the collective jam. And I encourage folks to tell, you know, their BIPOC friends, or if you're a BIPOC person, come through this jam. Everything's so warm. Both jams are really beautiful and warm, but there's space for everyone, and folks can go on to Queer Immunity's website, queermunitymn.com,
okay.
to find out about events and things and the jams. They've also at least an Instagram page. They have an app. And so all of these events are posted in those spaces, and you can find more info. But mm-hmm. generally, every Tuesday,
all right.
6 to 8 at okay. Queer Immunity. And again, next week is the BIPOC jam.
Okay.
And then the week after that, it'll be collective. And there are other jams. I'd be happy to share.
And so people just have to sign up. They don't have to have any experience. And is there any fee for it or anything?
There's no fee.
Okay.
I love sharing this. You can do a pay what you can thing if you want to. I usually don't and haven't promoted that. That was kind of maybe the idea. But I just think it's such a life-saving wellness thing that just mm-hmm. like, I could do this for a couple hours a week.
Yeah.
And there's some other really amazing folks that are working on improv jams also that have like a okay. different approach. Mine's a little more wellness focused, a little more workshoppy.
Because you have the improv for healing, and is that then?
That was its own independent workshop. So that
okay.
was to be a monthly workshop, improv workshop.
Okay.
But it's basically, my approach is the same at the jams. Okay. But hopefully we'll get that workshop going maybe next several months. But that'll be announced. But for right now, it's just the jams. And if folks are curious about other ways to participate in improv, for example, Good Camel Comedy, run by John Gibbetatos, they have a really amazing BIPOC jam the last Sunday of every month over at 825 Arts. And so what I like about this jam is, like, at 6:30, from like 6:30 to 7:45, it's like jam, right? It's like BIPOC folks doing the make 'em ups, having a good time. And then at 8 o'clock, they open it up to everyone and we do a show at 8.
Oh, okay.
And you know what? This next jam that's coming up at the end of the this last Sunday coming up, I think it's the 100th BIPOC jam. Again, hosted and facilitated by Good Camel Comedy.
And where's that at?
825 Arts, which is just off of University Avenue.
It sounds really familiar, but I can't place it.
Yeah, it's in St. Paul. Sorry, I don't have that address
over
up for
that
you.
Way. Okay. Okay. Folks can Google.
Please Google.
What are they Googling?
Good. They're going to Google Good Camel Comedy.
Okay.
So they got the BIPOC jams on the last Sundays. They have a show that I do with some folks. I've done a couple of times, Laugh Battle over at Lush. It's so cute. The next one is on the 17th, and that's at 7:30 at Lush Lounge. Laugh Battle, bunch of cool improv games and kind of a warm, like, competitive spirit to it. I won the last one, if anyone's listening.
Oh.
Alexis Camille won the last Laugh Battle. And Good Camel also does, like, classes. We just did an event at the Children's Museum last week, working with kids, and we're just kind of almost our own exhibit and just did some improv games.
Yeah.
Most of the kids were, like, under 7, and they had a blast. And so, yeah, with Good Camel Comedy, those classes and things are pay what you can, like, and the jams are, like, free or pay what you can, and it's all about accessibility so folks can, like, come and, like, have a blast. I got some buddies who have an improv school that they created called Very Good Improv. That's Laura Berger, Chris Rodriguez, and Steph Callahan. They have a jam that's every other. Well, I don't have the specific dates, but if you look it up, Very Good Improv, they have a Wednesday jam that happens a couple times a month.
Okay.
Yeah, I could go down the line of people that are doing amazing stuff in addition to, like, Blackout and, you know, you mentioned Theater Public Policy or Danger Boat. I mean, just, like, I'll go on if you don't stop me. I will.
Well, let's take a break, and then we'll come back, and we can talk more about that. And you've got other stuff to talk about, your film and being a vet and all of that. We got to get that all in here tonight.
Yeah.
And, of course, happy Pride Month and
happy
Juneteenth.
Happy Pride Month. Happy Juneteenth. Ooh-wee. Celebrate. We should all be celebrating Juneteenth.
That's it.
To make that clear.
Yep, that's for sure. Well, I'm going to play a piece by Gay Adegbolola. Are you familiar with Gay's music? All right. This is called The Queer Blues.
Bring it.
My shame turned into fear. But now times have changed and I love being queer. I say I'm here now and I'm queer now. You better get over it. I say I'm here now and I'm queer now. You better get over it. Well, when I was a teen, I dated boy after boy to prove I was okay. You know I let them go to second base. Kisses, I didn't like their touch. My lies turned into fear. But now times have changed and I love being queer. I say I'm here now and I'm queer now. You better get over it. I say I'm here now and I'm queer now. You better get
did the housewife thing. You know, I'd wash and iron and I would cook and clean. I treated him like a king. But then I had headaches night after night, and it became real clear that times have changed and I love being queer. I say I'm here now and I'm queer now. You better get over it. You know I'm here now and I'm queer now. You better get over it. Just as I am, there's really nothing to fear. You know, times have changed and I'm okay being queer. I say I'm here now and I'm queer now. You better get over it. I say I'm here now and I'm queer now. You better get over it.
Doesn't come at me, the Juneteenth Jamboree. Man, they really pitch a ball, load of wigs and jobs and all. Everything is strictly free, the Juneteenth Jamboree. There's no shirking, no one's working, everybody stops. Guns are chopping, corks are popping, doing the Texas hop. If you really want a spree, chicks galore, I'll guarantee. Grab your dozen, come at me, the Juneteenth Jamboree, yeah.
The one and only Gladys Bentley with Juneteenth Jamboree. And you're listening to Fresh Fruit on KFAI 90.3 FM Minneapolis, St. Paul, around the world at KFAI.org. I'm Dixie Treichel here with Alexis
Camille.
All right. Okay. So, so we're talking comedy and. Yeah. What's happening next? Where are we going?
Where are we going? Let's talk about Pat and Glow Save the World.
All right.
Bam, bam, bam. It's like a queer sci-fi rom-com that is just gnarly and stupid and funny and has some really amazing folks in it. You got Destiny Davidson's in this one, and Miss Shannon Paul is in there.
Yeah.
And it's just... And oh, hello. I'm like naming all the, you know, queer black folks that I can think of. of course, Bree Patino, my co-star, who is brilliant and one of the funniest people on the planet. Let's make that clear. is in this film. So it's like super queer movie. It is about, let's say, the two smartest scientists in the world. The world is basically just on the brink, but they need a break. And this story is just kind of like about the idea of taking rest, even when it seems like it's completely inconvenient, mm-hmm. and trying to take rest with your partner who happened to be, you know, in an interracial relationship. And there are some undertones of what comes up and that dynamic. But while these two, like, super brilliant scientists, like, figure out how to rest and hunker down in a less high, you know, technically advanced homestead, and just, like, try to figure out how to exist together in this space. And it's, like, this film that was created and written and directed and edited by Simone LeClaire, whom you can find her work at directed by Simone. If you just Google her and check out some of her stuff. This story is, like, kind of like a queer love story that we want to see. A queer love story that is silly and funny and absurd, a little sci-fi-y, and has a happy ending. That's mm-hmm. not a spoiler. I just think there's a lot of queer film and stuff out there where it's always some twist why it doesn't work out, or it's some weird toxic relationship. But that's not this story. This is a really fun story. And they can check out patentglow.com to get some more information on it or see our little trailers. And we did this really big fundraising campaign that, you know, community has, like, made this film happen. Folks, like, put their time and money into this film. Folks, you know, like, crew and things like that, to make this happen. And we're super fortunate that it has been going so well. And folks can kind of look out for that film in the fall. In particular, folks who were able to contribute to our fundraising campaign, we're going to have a special premiere for those folks in the fall. That's all TBA. But again, check out patentglow.com and show us some love. You can follow us, all these sorts of things. And, you know, you can check me out on my Instagram. But, you can check out Simone LeClaire's Instagram to keep up with all the goings on, or directed by Simone, to see what's going on with Pat and Glow.
And what's your Instagram?
My Instagram? What is my Instagram? One Lex, the number one, and then LeCKS. I'm so social media, like, simple. Like, I just... It's a challenge. But yeah, so super excited about Pat and Glow Save the World. We want folks to connect with that. We put a lot of love into that. Gonna be at some places to talk about that. Yeah.
Okay.
I'll just say it again. Pat and Glow Save the World.
We'll be looking forward to that. It should be released, this year or next year? Sometime.
We're hoping in the fall.
Okay.
But, you know, the intention, again, is to do the premiere for folks that were able to contribute. That was kind of a perk for the folks that were contributing to our fundraising campaign, is to have their own little private premiere, of which you're invited to.
Thank you.
We'll make sure you get word when that goes down.
I love that.
You know, in fact, the film, you know, we got a lot of really beautiful support from folks. Like, there's a local composer, T. Aaron Sisko. He's an Afrofuturist author, a queer black brother in Minnesota, who did composing for the film. That's just, like, really intuitive.
Yeah.
And he just, like, gets our film and made some really beautiful music for it. So I want to give some love to him.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just something, again, that kind of film is something that I feel like is... feels like a nice, healthy, fun, and absurd queer like story.
Super
queer. Yeah, definitely. Like everybody who's working on the film is queer. Like, it's just created a really, I think the environment itself should be reflected through the film.
Uh-huh.
Y'all can go on this fun journey with us there.
Well, we were talking about Pride and the Pride Parade. I have a piece I want to play.
Yeah.
And then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about vets and queer vets and what you're doing. Thank you for your service.
Thank you.
And, you know, how we can get vets involved in improv and all that stuff and get into the nitty-gritty there.
I'm excited to talk about that. And, you know, folks going out to Pride, keep an eye out for us. We'll probably be marching with our church, New City Church. They're over on the south side, and they're just dope. It's pretty queer church. It is just like it is an extremely affirming and healing space that really focuses on deconstructing like religious trauma and all these types of things, and has a lot of access to resources and just your exploration of spirituality or religion and God. There are people of all sorts of backgrounds and non-affiliation with Christianity or church that come to the space just for the community. But it's just like a space to come, get some good word, good love, and good resources. And we'll be marching with New City Church in the parade, in the Pride Parade.
All right.
Excited to talk about that.
Yep. Speaking of the Pride Parade, I want to play this. I created this history story for KFAI's Mini Culture. It's short. It's about 6 minutes. And it's about Ashley Rooks, who was a transgender woman and worked on the early Pride Parade in the early 90s. And came in there when everything was in total abandonment and reckless, and she kind of whipped that parade into shape and professionalized it. And I want her to be remembered, and so I did a lot of research and went into the archives in different history thing areas in the city, the Treader and the Minnesota Historical Society. And, so I want to play this piece about Ashley Rooks, Loved a Parade. It's about 6 minutes. Each year, thousands of people line the streets for the Ashley Rooks GLBT Pride Parade. But who was Ashley Rooks, and why is the parade named after her? Ashley Ann Rooks, a transgender woman, loved parades ever since she was a child. Her enthusiasm for pageantry and community inspired her to become involved with parades as an adult. Ashley became the Aquitennial Grand Day Parade Chair for a year and gained experience in organizing a parade on a large scale. Preferring to work with the LGBTQ community, she turned towards the Twin Cities Pride Parade, an event she found politically and spiritually significant. And in 1990, she started working with Twin Cities Pride. Seeing how the parade could be improved, she knew there was more to be done. The turning point for Ashley and the Twin Cities Pride Parade came in 1993, when with her organizing skills and experience, she took full command of the parade. Andy Groot. She was a colleague of Ashley Rooks.
I knew Ashley when I was the executive director of Outfront Minnesota, and Ashley was on our board of directors. Ashley was a very kind person, a very community-oriented person. And Ashley brought to our LGBTQ community her skills and her expertise as a parade organizer from the Aquitennial, and she professionalized the Pride Parade.
Archivist Stuart Van Cleve in 2011, talking about Ashley when he was the historian for the Twin Cities Pride Committee.
In 1992, she went to the Twin Cities Pride, saw the parade, and was horrified at how disorganized it was. So then 1993 rolls around, and she sends this letter that's called Stuff About Your Parade, and it basically just completely critiqued everything about the parade. She hated it. It was all wrong. And so she decided that she was the only person who could fix this. And the theme of 1993 was a family of pride. The idea was is that you were going to get the whole family together, all the different groups, and have them all have a voice and be represented.
This is Ashley Rooks in an interview with historian Scott Paulson in October 1993.
When I started working with the Pride Festival, the parade had traditionally been rather a free-for-all. The lineup on that street on Sunday morning, first come, first to march. In the past several years, we've organized ourselves, we've set ourselves all down on paper, we know who one another are. I love this.
people would see Ashley riding her magnificent red tricycle up and down the parade route, making sure everything was in order. They loved her no-nonsense approach and community-oriented spirit. Brad Tyson was a host with Green and Yellow TV. Here he is broadcasting live at the 1993 Twin Cities Pride Parade.
Here's Ashley Rooks on the bike. She put on today's parade. She's the number one head cheese. There's Ashley. Really good. Thanks for asking.
Ashley was a maverick at producing parades that broke barriers. Her parades became more inclusive with trans visibility, a variety of ages and cultures, and brought LGBTQ plus people and allies together in solidarity and celebration. Here's Ashley again in October 1993.
District 202, for instance, this was a big deal, and that's the first time youth had ever been in that parade. The first time there were two groups of Southeast Asians and East Asian and Polynesian individuals were bringing people of color, a multicultural attitude into our home. I think that's positive stuff.
I like the way that Ashley Rooks has the parade put together this year. People of similar interests, their units kind of follow each other.
During her time as parade director, Ashley expanded 30 units in 1992 into 270 units in 2000, making the Twin Cities Pride Parade the largest of any kind in Minnesota and the surrounding states. In June 2000, just a week before the Twin Cities Pride Parade, Ashley passed away unexpectedly at the age of 52. Here's Anne DeGroot again.
It was shocking to us when she died. I remember being at the out front office at the time, and we got a phone call. We were stunned. Ashley really left an impact.
The 2000 Twin Cities Pride Committee decided to name the parade in Ashley's honor, the Ashley Rooks GLBT Pride Parade. Ashley Rooks is one of the most significant figures in Twin Cities Pride history.
She had this penchant for wearing like militaristic clothing, and so she was just this total presence. She would command and they would follow. Her era was probably the best in terms of parades.
This is Dixie Treichel for KFAI. All right. That was Ashley Rooks, a loved a parade. And we honor Ashley. Let's not erase her. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we're back, and I'm here with Alexis Camille. And what's happening now?
What's happening now? I'm just, like, this is really special to be talking about this stuff because, again, I really experienced improv saving my life. I'm not the only person that has shared that and has experienced that. And just through my exploration of improv, just to like make some friends, and you know, after someone had like kind of tricked me into doing improv because they were like, you should try this, and they finally, you know, they convinced me I was taking them to their rehearsal, mm-hmm. and apparently they had signed me up for a jam.
Yeah.
And like they're like, let's go. And I was like, oh, no, thank you. I was so shy. And 20 seconds into it, I was like hooked. I was like, wait, this is improv? They're like, yeah. I'm like, I've been doing this my whole life. You know, just make it like this is my whole personality. So at that time, you know, I moved out to Minneapolis to take care of some family. And so I went over to Huge Theater, and at the time, that night, it was a random night. I was like, let me go over there, because, when I first started poking around at improv, and, you know, I was meeting some interesting people. Maybe I'll meet some folks. And it was the first week I was here, and it just so happened they were having this, it was called, I'm going to mess the name up. It was called the Tiny Women Improv Festival, like a tiny festival that was predominantly, you know, at the time, yeah. It was, like, women. And there's just all these, like, improvisers doing all these really amazing improv sets, and it was all women, and it was just like amazing. And then when I came out of there, a local comedian, storyteller, and creator, and also a member of Blackout Improv that I'm now part of, Jada Poli,
oh, yeah.
Saw me in the lobby.
Jada's been in Fresh Fruit.
Yeah, I bet. Okay. And Jada was like, hey, we got this BIPOC jam. And then, you know, and I was like, oh, cool. And then that turned into, hey, like, Blackout Improv's a thing. Check them out. And then I was like, what is this? My mind is blown. And then that turned into auditioning for Blackout Improv. And that whole journey of just, like, challenging myself and learning to just, like, think differently and connect, I just started to notice a lot of healing in myself and letting a lot of stuff go, or just, you know, having a space to express. And Blackout became this really special space in that a lot of times part of the format is like you have a conversation with a bunch of other Black folks. We're not a monolith. And we talk from, you know, about things from the UN to cheesecake, social justice, Beyonce, and jump up and do improv based off of that conversation.
Yeah.
And so in that journey, I discovered a lot about my sense of community and connection to folks. And so back up, when I got out of the Marine Corps, you know, I'd already done 2 tours in Iraq. And I was hurting. And improv connected me to people, even if I still felt a little timid in some places and not sure how to connect. Mm-hmm. When you're doing improv, it's so, in my opinion, my experience, I'm more myself when I'm doing improv, when I'm doing the make-em-ups.
Yeah.
And at least got there. And you have to connect with other people to do that. I could do a solo show, I guess. But it's a really beautiful thing to build this trust with these people and create community. So Huge and Blackout were foundational in that healing journey. Huge made so much space for a lot of folks and a lot of access to creating, whether it was, you know, becoming a teaching assistant when I really was, like, trying to figure it all out.
Yeah.
Directing shows, teaching workshops, and just getting a lot of hands-on experience. And I feel like a lot of people of that community approach things that way, like bring folks in, whatever experience level, what's a way we can learn and put you in a position where you're doing what feels good to you with improv.
Yeah.
And so to date now, with that discovery, something that's really important to me and I look forward to doing, maybe it's getting a grant or working with some other folks and doing improv with veterans, in particular combat veterans, because I know how healing this tool is. Mm-hmm. And veterans are some of the military folks, some of the funniest people I've ever met in my life in general. Mm-hmm. But I think to provide a container that I'll meet veterans where they're at. Like, I know where they're going to come. Like, I know how that's going to show up. I want to leave some space for where they're at, but create a route or a container that kind of brings it in a little tighter, and they find the healing, and they find that joy, that radical joy, that permission to, you know, embrace life in a really different way and embrace existing. You know, like when things shut down and I didn't have my improv, that's when I really realized, like, I was like, oh my gosh, this is like, this has given me, that was, you know, improv has given me life.
Yeah.
It's not so much about the attention thing. It is about, like, somatically what is happening in my body when I'm playing with my friends.
Yeah.
When I'm having this kind of good time and expressing and learning different ways to express and being silly and physical. And yeah. I'm really, really grateful for that.
Did you feel like it kind of removed? I imagine in the military, things are a little bit more rigid.
Uh-huh.
You know, and structured.
Yeah.
So
not my strong suit.
Yeah. But. So, well, you know, so this kind of gives people permission to open that up.
100%.
And not have to rely on that again or feel guilty of not being so structured or whatever the feelings are.
Yeah, you named it.
Yeah.
And that requires a lot of vulnerability, right? You got to put your walls down. You have to. It's hard. I'm not saying it's easy, and that's why I want to do this work, and I feel like I have the capacity to do this work with veterans in particular, and not completely exclusive, but in particular with combat veterans, because that's a whole other kind of mindset
it's
and
trauma.
Energy and trauma. Yeah, and that's stored, as we know, in our body. And I don't necessarily want it to be trauma focused, right? What is it? Trauma, but trauma informed. And again, create a container where folks can express the things they need to, but also there's a lot of catharsis and grief processing to help let some things go.
Yeah.
You ever have people like say to you, like, let that go, let it go, let it go, let it go. And you're like, what is that? Even like, I can't, let it go. Really, it's like, oh, I didn't know what that meant.
It's
I didn't
not have an intellectual process.
It's not, like, I need some tools here.
Yeah, yeah.
And by way of improv,
it's emotional.
I realized I was letting a lot of stuff go because I had to let people in a little bit.
Yeah.
Even if we're just playing games. Like, and so, and it was a really safe way to do that. And there's a lot of grace in, you know, quote unquote, like, misstepping. Hey, time out. We're not going to say that, but let's move forward. Okay, my bad. And a lot of grace. You know what I mean? Grace to the person that's called, hey, time out. Don't say that. That's that's a little wild. Like, oh, my bad, my bad. So, you know, there's got to be, there are people willing to work with me in that. I want to take some steps to attract folks that want to help support that goal of creating workshops, programmings, long-term sessions and things with veterans, combat veterans in particular, to work stuff out. And again, find that like joy, because it's not even just joy in the context of being a combat veteran. It is like, I know my humanity, because somewhere along the route, my humanity took a left turn or got watered down, and I didn't notice it happening until it got checked and was given a place to rebuild. So the hope, again, is to do some improv with veterans. There are people in this community, improv community, that I trust to support that. Like, I would love to have some of my friends be teachers and support that. And there are some amazing comedians and creators and storytellers in town who are beyond capable of supporting that journey. Can I name a few people that come to mind?
Yes,
just
please do.
I can. All right, everybody, get your phones out. Look these people up, because they're brilliant. You got like Sarah McPeck, some of y'all might know. Jada Pulley is an amazing creator. Denzel Beelin, Jex Arzaeus. You know, I do, it's called Soap Prov. Jex created this, and Laura Hild created this show where we do an improvised soap opera that is just cheeky and funny. Aww. And one of my favorite things in the world to do. Chris Rodriguez, I mentioned earlier, over at Very Good Improv. Is a queer cat in town and just like a brilliant educator. Ruben Gomez, Nico Pacheco is brilliant. Mayotte is making great music. The folks over at Uproar, like, go check out their open mics. It's, I think, pay what you can or free over at Bryant Lake Bowl. That is a quote-unquote safe space. If you're down, and that's run by like Davon Bland and Comrade Trip and Xochi De La Luna, and you know, Ashley Henderson is hilarious. Check out Falk, you know, Miss Shannon Paul. I'm sorry, Falk is funny Asian Women Collective. They're brilliant. Khadijah Cooper,
and they are blue.
And, they,
mama, look out there.
Hello, right? So all of these creators and comedians make space, and they give folks a home. Again, with Destiny Davison and Ross Flores, they have the Honey Pot over at the Hive Collective. Check out the Honey Pot. Go over to Ruben's. Check out the neighborhood at the Jungle. They're doing some amazing improv over there. So look these people up. Head over to Queer Immunity. Look Good Camel Comedy up. See how you can support. Head over to the Minnesota African American Heritage Museum and Gallery. They have some amazing exhibits up, like Radical Joy by Miko Simmons. They have an exhibit, you know, a thing going on tomorrow from 6 to 8 and in relation to, like, Juneteenth and stuff. But Lieutenant Sonny, that was somebody else that was on my mind, who's amazing, funny human being, dancer, singer, rapper, and these people exist in this community, and the access to the healing art improv exists in this community, and I hope folks make their way to us so that we can play and make up, whether you just want to do it for fun or you're like, hey, I want to work on this skill and see what I can do. And, you know,
I would love it if you'd get some of these people together and all of you get in here and let's do a show together. And
hot dog. We could do some improv right now before we go off the air. Do you want to try?
We've got like 1 minute.
That's all we got.
What do you want?
All right. Let's do this. I'm just going to just make anything up. And all you got to do is like agree to whatever I'm saying in the sense that, like, just believe in it.
Okay.
Hey, Tanya, thanks for meeting me at the Pride Parade. I didn't think you were going to show up.
I think I was going to, but then I didn't know if I was going to, and then I didn't think I was.